In this episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, please join us as we interview Amethyst Dragon from Neverwinter Nights 1 Persistent World, World of Anea.
It's the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community, by the community. You can find us online at NeverwinterNightsPodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey, this is Justin here, DM from the Realms of Trinity.
This is A. Rowan, DM from Realms of Trinity and part of the Neverwinter Night podcast.
This is Gary, DM of Realms of Trinity.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian from the Realms of Trinity and Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Hi, this is Nathan, a.k.a. the Amethyst Dragon, creator and DM of the Neverwinter Nights 1 Persistent World, World of Anea.
And you're listening to the 142nd episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, the podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games. Well, we got a lot of good stuff coming up today in this podcast. We have an interview with the creator of the World of Anea, and we also have good news items we picked up for Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 IGN Vault. One of the first thing is for Neverwinter Nights is there's a Neverwinter Nights module Jas is going to go into.
Yeah, so for Neverwinter Nights, there's a new module now called Neverwinter Wood, Wake of Gontalgrim. It's by Kenneth Lamella. It's on the Vault. And a brief synopsis of that is Neverwinter Wood follows the events after Gontalgrim. Driss Duerdon sets off to Neverwinter for revenge. The last conspirator of Clem Greeth's plan to control the Sword Coast awaits in the heart of Mount Hattano. Settlers have come to rebuild upon the ruins of Neverwinter. They are alone in the wilds, hoping for a new life. Sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, it does. And also another module based off of the new Neverwinter story that was put out, the Neverwinter series that's coming from, hopefully coming out from Cryptic with the latest news that was just broke last week from our previous podcast interviewee, Tom Logue. He had posted out an article where Atari has sold off Cryptic to some third party for other development. I guess they're trying to make their company more profitable, and I guess they don't believe that Cryptic's going to be a profitable endeavor, so...
I think a week or two ago, we had another new module from the same story.
Yeah, obviously it's a good story. He's definitely created a lot of good stuff for Forgotten Realms. I mean, he's done a ton of stuff for Forgotten Realms and Ari Salvatore. And this is just another chapter into that, his long list of great productions and contributions to the stories. And you know, the fact that at least, even if the Neverwinter, quote, Neverwinter Nights 3 isn't created, at the very minimum, at least people are going to be taking these ideas and creating persistent worlds, modules. It's a lot of fresh material for a lot of new content. So, you know, the community certainly wins out, regardless of whether Cryptic is able to complete the project or not with this sale of them from Atari. In Neverwinter Nights 2, we have another new module. Rowan's going to talk about.
Yep. The new module is called Thesk Adventures in Mosshold by Megalolysis. Basically, the plot is that you've been ambushed by bandits while on your way south, and you escape only with your life. You must now find money and means to survive. This is a single-player module for Neverwinter Nights 2. Mask of Betrayer and SOZ expansions are required to be able to play. It's designed for a level 1 character of any class or race. Companions will be provided throughout the game. The total module should take about 2 to 4 hours of play, and you should expect to achieve level 5 by the end of the game.
Also, we got a Neverwinter Nights 2 models. One, we have actually a couple creatures and a weapon type that Gary's going to talk about in a minute. The first is Shadow Dragon and Dracolich by Dan Pigden. And I was taking a look at them on the Vault. It's very cool. I've been talking a while now about, you know, there being some new dragon models or at least modifications to the existing ones for a Dracolich and the Shadow Dragons and another type of thing with that. These are definitely great creations to add to your module for and or persistent world to, you know, actually show a little bit something outside the box instead of having – it's less of a stretch of imagination that this is a Dracolich or this is a Shadow Dragon just by changing the dragon's color or maybe some special effects on it. This actually is some texture changes that really – make it look a little more convincing and believable. The Dracolich even has, in the wings, has like transparencies and things like that to actually make it look see-through, like bone and stuff. So it's actually not bad at all, and definitely be a good addition, at least if it start, and hopefully there could even be some updates to these to make them tinning mesh a little bit better and just more usable and malleable for your content.
Yeah, then there's new Rapier models by Chaka Ino. He thought that there aren't enough of those decent-looking rapiers, so he created two models himself for each of those two templates. There are three model parts and textures. Yeah.
I took a look at those as well. We will be incorporating those at Realms of Trinity with our Chapter 6 release, which comes out next month, and because they're definitely. There's definitely a need for some more models for rapiers. You're right, Gary, and it's certainly great to see players, well, the content developers getting involved in creating these things for the players, because I mean there really wasn't enough to begin with, and now that some of these new weapons packs, like the there's been like Legends armors and different things like that that have been added to the previous years, and now this is some new stuff. It's always nice to see new things coming out still that could be used to freshen up the game world and add more variety. I think the more variety you have out there, the more the world looks alive instead of seeing copies of the same thing over and over and over again, just with different colors or something.
Yes, and that's true. There's quite a few weapon models who could use some more types. What comes to my mind, for example, is a Skies. There's not really a decent one with it. Well, one or two, but the rest is just plain. Just, for example, a weapon that isn't really looking decent.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely, you know, there's definitely stuff that if you look good, this is coming back to something that I brought up on the previous podcast news segment about it would be nice to actually have a section where on the podcast where we permalink these types of packages for Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 so that you can go in and say, hey, these are our top picks. And I'm not saying that there weren't going to be content rating as far as quality and all the other stuff, but at least as far as stuff that, you know, either A, we used, B, we know it has been used, and would really be like these are things that you can't live without if you're working on, you know, seriously working on a persistent world or a module that you want to have these types of resources added in. You know, it would be nice to actually have a page. So it's something we're going to be looking at in the third quarter of 2011 to add to the Neverwinter Nights podcast website, a new page for to permalink these things and to organize some stuff that, you know, just must-haves, you know, to put it lack of better terms, so just a must-have section. So, but yeah, these are the things that come to mind whenever we find them on the ball when I scour through and look for new content. And, you know, sometimes I don't find the new content just by looking at the daily post. I actually go in and actually do searches and things. I mean, another good example of that is custom sky domes for Neverwinter Nights 2. You could do a lot of great things with custom sky domes and the way how it livens up an area or gives a really unique look to an area, and to be able to find a whole slew of them is great, because I just did a search recently where I went out there and I was like, you know, I need a new sky dome for this board that I'm working on. I think that would be nice to go out and actually take a look and get one. And here I did a search, and lo and behold, there was actually a good about four or five of them. Anywhere from, like, if you're doing fake interiors for inside caves and different things like that, I found a whole huge pack for those, and I also just found a really set of beautiful exterior sky domes just outstanding work. So actually on the next podcast we'll feature those, what I found for that, just as an example, because they're really good. And they really add a lot to the game. And last but not least, for Neverwinter Nights 2, next month on June 25th, we will be releasing Chapter 6 of the Realms of Trinity 2 for Neverwinter Nights 2 Persistent World. It's called The Wailing of the Plains, and it is going to be the second to last chapter of the second campaign. So stay tuned for more details. Check the website out at www.realmsoftrinity.com and click the picture in the middle for sneak peek pictures and some story information on our forums. Well, you guys got anything else
Nope.
This interview? Okay.
I don't think so.
Well, let's go interview Amethyst Dragon.
Sounds good.
All right.
Yep.
Hey, Amethyst Dragon, thanks for coming on the podcast and talking about your persistent world. You know, really great to get you on. I've looked at a lot of your work, and it's fantastic.
Thanks. I've been listening to the podcast for a little while and fell behind, but caught up the last few days since I got the invitation with, like, 20 episodes.
Wow.
Well, you can download them to the phone and listen to them anytime.
Yeah, that's the joy of the podcast. Wherever you want to go, we're there. Hey, start out, so tell us about yourself, a little bit of background, and be as personal as you want or stick to the Neverwinter.
Sure. Well, I am a 35 at the moment year old stay at home dad, educated as a teacher. I've been playing D&D for more than 20 years now. Got into Neverwinter Nights a little bit after the game came out. A buddy of mine bought the game for me, and then a few months later, I bought a computer that could actually handle the game. Played through the campaigns, played a few modules off the vault. At the time, running a pen and paper game as a DM in a custom world called Aenea, which, you know, I kind of brought into Neverwinter. Got into the tool set because I wanted to make a little module that my buddies could play with during the week when we weren't actually sitting at the table playing D&D on Saturday nights. And then I eventually decided, you know, let's turn it into a persistent world. So I got into trying to figure out how to use this incredibly complicated tool set. I've taught myself everything I know.
Yeah, I know that feeling. When you started, how what was the documentation and stuff like when you... I haven't really worked with the Neverwinter 1 tool set a whole lot, but I know for 2 it was abysmal at first.
The documentation's been pretty good once I started, because I didn't actually start really building, like trying to customize things much, until about 2005. For the initial jump into the tool set, I had actually been to a demonstration at Gen Con before the game was released, so I had seen like how you could throw together items and throw together areas and stuff.
Well, I didn't even know they had something like that at Gen Con. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it must have been Gen Con 2000, maybe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the first Gen Con I ever been to was the one in 2008, so a little bit too late for that.
I grew up in Wisconsin, and they used to have it in Milwaukee for years and years and years. And then, well, TSR got bought out by Wizards of the Coast, and they started moving it around. Haven't been to it since.
Yeah, well, the last one I went to was in Columbus, and it really didn't miss too much. It was kind of scaled down or something. It didn't have a lot of, I don't know, it was a lot of decent amount of people there, but the way they ran it, it wasn't a whole lot. It kind of lost the focus. They kind of lost the focus of D&D. It went more to like collectible card games.
Yeah, I've been seeing that for years. Lots of good costumes though.
Oh yes, I was just gonna say you won't have any problem finding a couple elves running around and/or dwarves or whatever. That's just a Roan.
Well, actually, I was going to say I was tempted to ask what you were dressed as, Brian, but I don't want that mental image. So what got you interested in creating a Neverwinter Nights persistent world? What type of a vision or overall goal did you set for yourself when you started out?
When I started out, I was just trying to kind of bring my tabletop game online for anybody else to log in besides the guys from my D&D game who... never really played that much anyway. And I had all this material that I've been working on for years and years and years. I started out in second edition, switched to third edition about 5 years after it came out finally. Neverwinter third edition? I can handle that. I know the rules and everything. So I just started playing around. Started with one base village that all the adventures can be based out of. And it's actually still the starting village to this day for all the players. I have everybody start there after every server reset. As far as the vision goes, it was just to have a persistent world that kind of mirrored my style of game. Not too serious, not too funny, just, you know, hey, let's log in, have some fun, maybe do some roleplay, maybe do some just, you know, dungeon delving and monster bashing, a little, you know, home invasion here and there. Go into a monster's lair, kill it, take its stuff.
No, and I mean, honestly, I think that's one of the better mindsets that we've had. I mean, honestly, with everybody we've dealt with in various conversations, what we do in Trinity, what we've heard about for what you've built, you know, it just, it shows when the developers want it to be something that people can just show up and have fun with.
That's my goal. It's just, that's kind of like my tabletop game too. I've had people in and out over the years, and it's just, I want it to be kind of social where you're comfortable coming in, sitting down, playing a role, and if you want to, just talk out of character. I've added things over the years. You know, if you want to talk over character, do the, you know, two little slash things that'll actually change the text color in the game. For the people who want to stay in character, it's easy to tell the difference now. Those little check commands that got added in the, was it the 1.69 patch, were really helpful.
Yeah, no, and I mean, that's the thing that does make it great. As you says, just the different colors and some of the different capabilities that were added, it actually does make it so people can be a bit more free in the way they play.
That's my goal.
So can you tell us some of the backstory of your Persistent World and what you need to get start playing and how long you've been live?
Okay. Are you thinking backstory as in like module development or backstory as in game world history?
Game world history.
There's not a whole lot of it defined. As I need something for an adventure or for a particular village or NPC, I'll make something up and work it into the storylines, and my players are great about keeping track of some of that. And I've had a lot of them say that, you know, it's nice to see a world that has history, but it's kind of on the fly as I need it. It's been that way since I was developing the game world, so I had a few things like, you know, I had a calendar all prepared, which just happened to match up with the default days of the week and stuff with the Neverwinter Nights game. Thought it was funny. I had 12 months, 4 weeks, 7 days each week, so 28 days in each month, 12 months. It worked out great. And then every once in a while, I'll throw in, you know, oh, this happened in this year, and, you know, here's an item that's left over from it. Or here's an undead guy that used to be alive back then, and now he's just wandering around. It's not too complicated to get into. My game is set in a custom world. It's not Forgotten Realms. I've been trying to get rid of, you know, any references to Forgotten Realms over the years because, well, it's not. I don't have anything against Forgotten Realms. It's just that my whole world is not part of it because I couldn't afford it when I first started out. I couldn't afford any of the source books or anything like that, so I never bothered to learn all of that. So when I was building Aenea, it's got its own history, its own, you know, little tidbits here and there, but nothing to, you know, kind of lock players in. To get started, it's not a whole lot, except for downloading the hacks. We do use CEP. We're on version 2.3 right now. I know 2.4 is out, but I'm holding off on going to 2.4 until they get their crafting system finished and in to the updates, just because there's a lot of overlap on 2DA files that I have to merge.
Yeah, that's always fun right there. Yeah. That's a good call, too. Wait. Just wait.
Yeah, if I could, I would just, you know, snap my fingers and it would be merged and updated and fine, but it's a lot of work because over the years I've come across things that I wanted to add to the game and things that I haven't seen, so I've had to learn how to make. We've been live since June 16th of 2006. I discovered 2 days later that my firewall was actually blocking anybody from even seeing the game. So I got my first players on June 18th, but technically we've been live for almost 5 years now. I started building a year before that when I was on a dial-up connection, and I would download stuff from the vault. Well, I'd start the downloads and go to bed, and then they'd be done by the time I got up in the morning.
Oh, yeah, the good old days.
You know, so, you can play Neverwinter just fine on dial-up. Hosting, not so much.
So back into the background story, you don't do you have any you know, persistent villain or just any
I do have a few of those. For a while we had a red dragon that was being troublesome until the players killed him off, and then then he came back. He had some followers that tried to bring him back, and so we had a big event where we had all these, I think I had probably 15 players logged in, which is a lot for me, and they managed to keep him from coming back permanently. And then they found out who was really trying to bring him back was a villain that I had developed in my pen and paper game, and there were just a couple of references to him in the Neverwinter module, the Persistent World module up until then. But he showed his face at the end of that battle and managed to get away. He's not a nice guy. He was born half-demon, and as a little kid, he got killed by a vampire. The vampirism and the demon blood didn't play very well together, and one day when he and his master were caught out in the sun, he survived, because the sunlight doesn't hurt him. He ended up being a powerful sorcerer, very, very evil, and forever trapped in the body of a kid. Yeah. Not very nice.
I can imagine that would drive someone to evil.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So he's kind of a enemy in the background that the players haven't really seen since then. But we've got other guys like the Emperor of the Orcs. In my game world, the Orcs are just as smart as humans. They're kind of like, I see them as kind of like, you know, Klingons on Star Trek. You know, they're big into the warrior culture and everything, except they don't mess with that whole, you know, waste time with that whole honor thing.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I never thought of that comparison. That's a really good draw comparison to the two types.
So in my game world, they actually had their own little kingdom for a while, and they actually invaded and took over like six human kingdoms, probably 100 years or so before the game time started. And to this day, there's this huge empire that's run by orcs. And then they just decided to stop expanding. So that's where they're at. So their emperor is a big, tough warrior, and he's a priest of the god of destruction and insanity.
So how would you classify your type of persistent world? Are you RP, action, adventure? What about your magic setting? Is it high, medium, or low?
I would classify it as primarily an action server with roleplay mixed in. The roleplay is player-led. I don't enforce it. It's up to the players. If they want to roleplay, they can. If they don't, they don't have to. I do kind of ask that if, you know, you don't feel like it, but you see somebody else getting into the role-playing, at most you make a little effort and just say, okay, or, you know, do the double slash thing to let them know you're out of character, just so as not to throw them completely out of their role-play. But it's not enforced. It's just, you know, up to the individual players. Magic? I've heard some people call it medium magic. I've heard some people call it high magic. Like, our most powerful weapons that a player can get are +5. Except for a couple of special ones. Like, there's a special one that you need to kill that orcish emperor to even get into his palace. It's a +7.
Okay.
There's a couple of special items that will actually get more powerful as the wielder does. And those will go up to, like, +10. But they don't get that way until the character is 40th level.
That's cool. Did you custom program those? Or?
Yes.
Oh, awesome.
I've done, I'd say, 99.5% of the scripting. I've modified CEP's Sparky Spawner. So I use that with some modifications that I made. And I use a modified version of Mark Shire's Persistent Chest system. For item storage, but it's only from certain locations in the game. They can't, you know, call it from anywhere. And Silicon Scout's treasure system. It's all, like, merchant-based, so you can, like, have it generate random treasure that's not actually contained in tables in the script. It's actually in merchants in a different part of the module. That's pretty much it for other people's scripting. But, yeah, like, I do a lot of unique items. My first scripting, I start out using Lilac Soul Script Generator. Huge, huge, huge help to a beginner because it spits out the code and it's got comments in it and it's very easy to read. And as you go along, you can figure out how to make it more efficient. You can look online and see examples of what other people have done. But yeah, that's how I learned to code, was trial and error.
Yeah, I
on my guinea pigs.
Hey, there's no better. Hey, they're a captive audience.
they know that I don't actually test anything before I put it in the module. I build it in the module and throw it on the server, and if it doesn't work, then I go to work fixing it.
You got a nice player base. If I did that, my nuts would be in a vice, probably.
I was just going to say, you have a phrase for that.
Yeah. It's called, my balls hurt.
Yeah.
First, dude, I get, like, some of the first private messages I get. I mean, if something's misspelled, in a debug, or not a debug, but a player notification or something from a script, that you say, oh, by the way, this is all misspelled, or, you know, I get that kind of stuff.
There are some misspellings that I have left in my game on purpose. Like, I added a version of Merlin Spoons. All it summons is oatmeal.
Yes.
And I actually have a cleric spell, create food, that would normally create bread. If you happen to be carrying those spoons, it'll only create oatmeal. But I misspelled Murrayland. And I was informed of it a couple of times, but I told him, you know what? I guess he's just, you know, it's his cousin here in Aenea. So, a little different name. Or, I misspelled Duergar? You know, those evil dwarves? Yeah, I misspelled that, and that one's staying, too. Because I added quite a few of them to the palette, and I don't feel like changing their name.
Just say the evil wizard did it.
Yeah.
That's great. I like the way you think on that. That's awesome.
I've got quite a few wizards. My players like having spell choices, and I've added well over 100 spells.
Wow.
A lot of them are from my pen and paper game, so I was like, try to get it in. And so I had to learn how to add spells and feats, and I've been experimenting with prestige classes. And
jeez, oh whiz.
I think I've touched on almost everything there is to do with custom content. I'm far from being an expert on any of it, except for maybe spells and icons. I've done a few spell icons. lots of 2DA edits, lots and lots and lots of those. But, you know, players like the choices, and I like to throw stuff in so they can customize things. I've got spells that are almost duplicates of other spells, but they might have a different visual effect or a different name or a different damage type, but they like it.
Oh, yeah. The variety of choices is huge. Yeah, for you to have that knowledge and be able to do stuff, plus the fact that you're actually doing it yourself. I mean, that's nice because you're the controller of the content that's being put in the spells that you're creating. And I don't know, I think that's a great way of handling it.
Yeah, my entire build team is me.
Yeah. A lot of the people that we've interviewed on the podcast, that seems to be a definite common thread is that you got one person just house and everything.
And yeah, I've kind of had to do that because it's, you know, it's game world that nobody else has the background in because it's, you know, out of my head for years. And part of it is I just like to learn new things. So I wanted to learn how to add spells. I wanted to learn how to do this. Or if I thought of something for the game, I'd have to figure out how to add it. And I've looked at, like, other people's scripts from the Vault and from the BioWare site. And frankly, some of it is way beyond my abilities. So I just teach myself, okay, how can I do this? What do I want to do? Can I make it work? And then other people's scripts I've read, and I'm like, ooh, since I know what I'm doing now, this looks like a mess. I can't use this, but I can use the idea behind it and get it to work myself.
Yeah, that's really cool. So, out of curiosity, what's your favorite spell you've created?
That's a tough one. It might be Tensor's Floating Disc, because that was one of my earliest spells. It was the second model that I'd ever made with GMAX, and it's because it's just a basic cylinder. I didn't even animate it. I just, you know, supermodeled it to something else that didn't have much for animations, that just kind of moved around. And it worked out, and my players like it. I like it.
So what does the spell do?
It conjures up a creature that looks like a hovering disc of force or glass, which is kind of what I have force look like in my game world, semi-transparent. And you talk to it. If you're the spellcaster, if you talk to it, it'll open its inventory window for you. You can pile stuff on. And then close it, and it'll just follow you around. That's all it does. It's basically indestructible. But it's got special scripting so that it doesn't act like a shield too much for the caster. So if, you know, an NPC attacks it, they'll go, oh, wait, this is a Tensor's Floating Disc. Who's its master? Oh, this person. Well, I'm going to switch and attack this guy instead. So does is carry your stuff.
I like it.
Nice. And dump it on the ground when the spell expires, which happens very, very quickly as a, you know, with a first level wizard. But, you know, you get higher level, you use extend spell, it'll last, you know, a full day.
Yeah, that's really cool.
How many DMs do you have on staff?
I believe, 4. They're not full-time DMs, they're actually primarily players that I've kind of recruited. I had one guy who started playing a few years ago now, and he kind of inquired about it because I was the sole DM for, you know, a couple years. But he was a player who spent a lot of time in the game, basically explored everything and interacted with all the other players already. So I made him my first assistant DM, and then that's Dungeon Master Mythgar now. Then I had another player that I had for a while, and I asked him to be an assistant DM because, you know, I can't be online all the time, and Mythgar can't be online all the time. The guy that goes online by the name of Eric of Atrophy, or Atrophied Eric, He's made a few things and put them out on the vault, but he spends a lot of time playing in Indiana. Got another guy, Dungeon Master Galen. Another longtime player, explored everything, knew everybody in the game. And I got a fourth guy who's kind of been away from the game for a while, but, you know, I keep him on the list. He was a good guy for helping people out. My DMs primarily will, you know, set up little adventures or, you know, hey, anybody in the mood for just some basic monster bashing? Here, orcs are invading or goblins are invading if it's a bunch of low-level people. My DMs spend most of their time as online as players rather than as DMs. They have more fun that way, and my world kind of runs itself. It doesn't need constant DM supervision. It, like I said, it's more of an action game than a role-play game, so, you know, not all the NPCs have to interact all the time in depth. Not really looking for more DMs at the moment, but you know what? Who knows? If I get more players online, I may need them. Or if my DMs get too busy, then I could recruit more. But like I said, Ania a lot of times runs without a DM actually online. Basically there for troubleshooting.
Yeah, it's definitely a good idea. Yeah, that's the best way. I've automate as much as you can, or, you know, put that this way you can spend more time developing more content or just doing more fun things like you're saying about having DMs doing impromptu, you know, drop of the hat events.
Yep. And my guys have actually, you know, gone into the tool set and built some stuff and sent it in to me. I've had players build some areas and send it in to me. Like, I have a demonic realm called the Dark Realm, because I don't use the traditional Abyss and Seven Heavens and whatever those are, the Celestial Planes. I've got, like, a Dark Realm and a Celestial Plane that, you know, doesn't have any areas yet, because what's the fun in just fighting good guys all the time? But, you know, I had players send in areas for that work by me, and I added them in, so... And I get players that can, you know, make their own houses and stuff like that. It's definitely not all my creation. A lot of ideas, a lot.
So what would you say are some of the biggest challenges you face while running or creating your persistent world?
Bugs. that's it right there. I have a huge bug list. Some of them kind of old because I haven't figured out how to exactly fix them. Some of them kind of old because they just kind of got pushed to the back of the pile. I try to fix the game-breaking ones first. I'm the one that tends to introduce those game-breaking bugs. Other times it's, you know, something I use that I downloaded that I have to fix. Like, I've had a lot of problems. I actually, MDBE? The database extender code, and I've actually had a lot of troubles with it, so now I'm trying to get it out of my module and replace that functionality. But yeah, I've added so much stuff that it's hard not to, you know, throw a few bugs in there. I haven't had problems with players or grief or anything like that, which, you know, just kind of goes, I think it's toward the style of the game and towards my players' credit, really. In the almost 5 years that I've been running the game, I've banned one person. And that's just because she was causing lots and lots and lots and lots of trouble. Most players I've found that even, like, the, you know, kind of immature ones will chill out and just have fun. Or they'll get bored, or they'll get discouraged by the fact that, you know, a huge download to play on my game. Not just CEP, I've got just in content that I've added is at least a gigabyte. Not in download, but once you decompress it.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Well, I add visual effects, and I add creature models, and I add placeables, and I download stuff from the vault when I see something cool, and then, of course, it gets added to, like, CEP, you know, 6 months down the road, so I've got double copies of it, but I don't take things out of my hacks, because then it's probably going to break something I already made. But, yeah, it's if I want something in the game, I can pretty much create it now. I've made new creatures. It's fun. I'm not very good at animating them, but, you know, if you can pull the animations from another model that's similar, it works. I've reskinned a couple of tile sets, which is nice. Made an Ice Caves one. Those turned out really good. I couldn't stand the Neverwinter Nights sewers. They were too clean, and they had all those pipes sticking up all over the place, so I made them darker and nastier and made a couple of extra crappy placeables that float in the water. It's nasty.
No pun intended.
Yeah, it's. I tend to use puns. even in game, I have a wand of invisibility that the icon is actually invisible. You can't see it in inventory. Mouse over it, and oh look, it's there, but you can't see it. So my game is not entirely.
That's good though. Sometimes that's the best way. That's best. That gives you cloud cover.
We talked a little bit about some of the scripting things that you had put in there, but is there any other... Actually, we talked about a bunch of different custom content already, but is there any other custom content you've done that you would want to bring up now? And What else do you see for the Neverwinter Nights community as a whole in the coming years?
Well, as far as what other custom content I use or that I've done, I've made a lot of stuff. And I'd say not even 5% of it makes it onto the vault as individual downloads for people in the community, because I build primarily for my players and for my game world. It's something that I want them to see. That I do get stuff off the vault myself, so I do want to contribute, so every once in a while I'll throw something up there that I've made, and usually it's something my players have seen already in game for a while, and then I'll share it. Sometimes I'll get impatient to release something, and I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm going to put this on the vault even before my players see it in my game. But I've started out with just GUI stuff. Like, I made some potion bottles, some icons, because those don't take any modeling skills. I can use Photoshop just fine, so I can make icons. And then I made a whole bunch of colored spell icons because I couldn't really tell the difference very well on all the purple ones that came with Neverwinter Nights. And people seem to like those, so I made a few other colored icons like the feet and stuff. If anybody's used a transparent GUI, that was mine. I use it all the time because I don't like the old one. Trying to think of some of the things that I've made that I've put up. I know I got a list somewhere, but I don't remember where it is. Cloaks, wands. I made some new icons for those because I got really tired of the default ones. Like I said, scripting. Pretty much anything I want to do now, I can do. Or I can figure out with, you know, a few hours worth of work. Where do I see the community going? Oh, it just depends on how many new people we can get in. Those of us who've been in the community for a while have picked up some skills over the years for making new stuff, but a lot of it is the players. If there's no players, then there's really no point in making new stuff for the game. But I was really, really happy to see that Good Old Games started selling Neverwinter Nights. The full game, all the expansions, up-to-the-date patch, and oh look, it's $10. You can't get a better gaming value than that. $10 one time, and the only other thing you're paying for is your internet access. You don't pay monthly fees, you don't pay for modules anymore since they canceled the premium modules. It's all free. So I'm hoping that draws in more players. I've been seeing a few new players who've never played before, which is nice. I've seen some older people playing. I say older by, you know, means of like 50, 60, 65. I've got one guy who plays once a week in my game because his daughter plays. I think that's pretty cool. So I see the community, just as long as we can keep drawing in people to replenish people who eventually do get bored with it, or who, you know, lose their copy of the game, or unfortunately I've heard of a couple people's houses burning down and them losing everything. I think this community can keep going. It's already going for, what are we going on, 9 years now since the game was released? Yeah. People were excited about the game even before that, so I'd say at least 10 years for a Neverwinter Nights community. Neverwinter Nights 2 came out, so that added a bunch of people, maybe Neverwinter Nights 1 players who had left the game, they came back for it. I'm amazed by this. This game has been out for almost 9 years now. As of, come on, June 2nd? June 6th? Something like that.
Somewhere around there.
And it's still going. We had an incredible amount of support from BioWare up until the 1.69 patch. And, you know, I was amazed at that. Years of support. Years of fixes, new content, new additions. I kind of like the fact I got one of my little changes to that patch. Something I adjusted like a year before, and here it was in the little change notes. Yes! Made a little difference.
what was it?
I was getting into the whole icon updates thing, and one of the things I wanted to update was the icons for the little emotes on the radio menu, and it turns out that at least one of the pop-up radials all use the same icon, even for different emotes. Well, they all use the same icon by the look of it before, but not by the file name. But I wanted to make something more descriptive so you could pop it up and not have to wait for the little mouse over tooltip to come up. And I couldn't do that because some of them use the same file. Well, a patch came out, and here's this little thing. Oh, by the way, these files have been changed so that, you know, people in the community can change them if they want to. I was, hey, look. Something I suggested actually made it into the game. Not that anybody'd see unless they download the icons that I, you know, made and put up on the vault, but the possibility is there. So the community is just there. I think it's...
Okay, so do you have any regularly scheduled events with your DMs?
Not really. Part of having, you know, kind of assistant DMs and more of an action free-for-all world is we don't have a lot of things scheduled. We do schedule things, and we'll try to, like, you know, let players know a week in advance that we're, you know, planning on doing this, and here's the time and date, and, you know, hope you can make it. But it's nothing that, you know, people are going to be incredibly sad if they miss out on. You know, we had that one big battle that we had a whole bunch of people log in for, which is the most people I had online ever. It's a relatively small gamer population for Aenea. I think, you know, having a low population in the first place kind of discourages some people from trying it out. But you know what? That's my game. The big download probably discourages quite a few people. But yeah, nothing regularly scheduled.
Yeah, so it's just random if the DM decides to just have an event and schedule one.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, a lot of it's run-of-the-mill, like, hey, we got a bunch of people on, let's do something. Or a lot of it, some of it's, you know what, I think I'm going to run something in about a week. Here's when I'm going to do it, and here's what characters to bring on, you know. Do we want the epic levels? Do we want the lower level people? I don't actually have tons and tons and tons of content for epic level characters, just because I think it's fun for the lower levels. But you know what? Neverwinter Nights allows it up to the 40th level, so I've started adding stuff for them. You know, like the Demonic Realm. That's really dangerous for lower level characters. Or that Orcish Emperor. I've had 40th level characters get smeared across the floor by him.
Sweet.
Yeah, he's kind of designed more for a party of 20th level characters. What? Soloing, he's a lot more difficult. Nothing regularly scheduled is sometimes. My players, I don't know how many of them, but they might be wary of me scheduling something. It's probably okay now, but about a year ago I scheduled an event, and I had a bunch of people participate, maybe 8 or 10. That's a bunch for me. And, you know, they fought off the Orcish invasion, which was kind of lame, but that wasn't really what that event was about. That one kind of got into my silliness because of the prize they got. Let's just say one of my players had never heard of it happening in Neverwinter before, but I rickrolled my players. I put them all in a cutscene, called them all to the same place, and had their characters say the lines to the song in time with the song. So eventually, I might do it again and, you know, actually put it to the music and throw it on YouTube. But, you know, that's the way events go.
No, that's a neat way to do things, though. I mean, I'll admit, when I'm DMing, usually if people are lucky, I give a week's notice. So it adds a level of fun, I think, both to the DM and the player, to just what can you come up with on the spur of the moment.
Oh, I think so, too.
Speaking of fun and spur of the moment activities, while you've been running your Persistent World, is there something that you found that was extremely enjoyable to do, memorable, your event-wise, creation-wise, of... I know we've had some very interesting arguments at times, you know, between players that you just sit back and watch, and, you know, it's both humorous and, you know, entertaining, and it has a storyline. Is there anything like that that you have?
Not too much for that I've witnessed as a player. I've shadowed people invisibly as DM, just to see their interactions when they don't know I'm there, because people's behavior changes. But, yeah, yes. I've got this one group of people that plays once a week. They have an appointment playtime Thursday evenings. And I've shadowed them and, you know, watched them role play and just drop out of character and back into character. I get a lot of enjoyment out of, well, seeing what the players do with the world. It's not so dynamic that everything's going to change, you know, in the world based on a couple people's, you know, interactions. I know there's worlds that are really dynamic like that and, you know, have a lot more DM involvement, and the DMs are the builders and they can change stuff like that all the time. But I've had people come up with in-character explanations for why things happen in the game. Like that Orcish Emperor, he is there for somebody else to kill after, you know, one person's killed him. And my character said, you know what? The God of Destruction just doesn't want him dead. So the priests keep bringing him back. I had for a while just generic bandits along the road, and every once in a while one of them would drop a cheese sandwich as part of his loot. I had one player write up a whole journal for this nameless bandit and post it on our forum. I actually took that and put it in the game so that there's a percentage chance that when you kill a bandit, it'll drop this journal and a cheese sandwich at the same time. But the journal would refer to things that used to happen when you encountered bits. Like, it might be along a bridge where there were traps set up, or it might be where a purple worm used to come out of the ground. It might be, you know, and it talks about these misadventures, and, you know, the cheese sandwich was his wages. You know, his interactions with the other bandits. That gives me a kick when players come up with that sort of stuff. And it's not just me coming up with the stuff, it's the players themselves that keep the game world going. If I didn't have players, I really wouldn't have a reason to do any of this. So
yeah.
Those are the enjoyable moments.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, as a DM, to me, that is the most enjoyable thing, is when the players start relaxing and you can tell they're having a good time.
Yeah, that's true.
In closing, is there anything else that you like to add to share with the podcast audience and your players?
Well, besides come by for a visit, but I also want to kind of direct people toward all the stuff that's out on the vault, not just stuff that I've made, because, well, I've made a lot, but all the stuff that's on the vault. It's what keeps this game going. Stuff by people like Lord of Worms and Six Thrice and Axe Murderer. I know you've had him on, but I don't use a lot of the stuff that he's made, but his talk editor, I use it constantly. People should try it out. It's one of the best ones that I've seen out there. It's fast, doesn't take forever to load anything. So it's not just things like, you know, the 3D models that are out there. There's scripts out there. There's prefab areas out there. And there's a lot of talented people. Go out and try it out and then vote for them. Comment. Let them know what you think, because, well, we like that sort of thing. Like this podcast.
Well,
listen to it.
Yes, yes.
There's a lot of information
yes.
here.
We need to get to our sixth listener. We have to...
Give us cash.
Yeah.
Worth a shot.
If you enjoy playing on a server or listening to the podcast, you know what? Buy the stuff if they got stuff on Cafe Press or whatever. Donate a little bit through PayPal. You know what? Even a couple bucks says, hey, I appreciate what you're doing. I've had players donate money to me just out of the blue. I was like, wow, thanks. I definitely don't do it for the money, but it's kind of like recognition.
Absolutely. If we were doing it for the money, I think we'd be, the lights be out, the doors be barred.
Yeah.
My players actually donated the money to buy a computer just to run the game.
I mean, we're in a similar situation. We don't host our stuff either, but yeah, it's definitely good whenever you have some help to curb the costs. You know, even if we don't get a PC donated, I mean, it does help keep the lights on. I mean, with the cost, you know, as well as any other Persistent World host, that there's cost involved, you know, especially if you got a higher player base and you want to make sure the internet connection's solid and, you know, quality.
So I'm just like, you know what, for all those people, players of different Persistent Worlds and listeners of the podcast and stuff, they'll accept donations. Throw out a couple of bucks every once in a while. You paid 10 bucks for the game, or, well, 90 if you bought everything brand new right when it came out, but...
Yeah.
You know what? You're getting so much value for this game. Think of all the hours and hours of entertainment. Throw your Persistent World throw a bone. Say, here, I appreciate what you're doing. I'm having fun. Thanks. Have a nice day.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what. Thanks again for coming on the podcast. Persistent World's awesome, and, you know, glad that you're out there creating this great content for the players and keeping the interest in a Neverwinter Nights franchise. It really makes a big difference.
I hope so, because I certainly enjoy this game. I'm actually seeing this both from a builder and a player perspective, because I like to play in my own game, which is why I add things that I like to the game. So if I can help other people enjoy it for longer, great. I know I certainly enjoy the things other people make.
Absolutely. Well, you get the closing line.
Get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity. We're solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2011.